You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. There has been something besides the shiny new cars, SUVs, and trucks grabbing attention this week at the North American International Auto Show in Detroit. That something is the uncertain future for the auto industry under incoming President Donald Trump. Detroit News business columnist Daniel Howes is here with us now. And Daniel, I think the quote that you gave us from Sergio Marchionne of Fiat Chrysler kind of hit the nail on the head. He said, "This is new territory for most of us. None of us have had a tweeting president."
Ain't that the truth? And so it continues. Yesterday in his press conference, he went after the pharmaceutical industry, and the drug share is just tanked. You know, it's one thing after another. But, you know, what's remarkable is Trump and his tweeting about the industry, whether intentionally or not, displaying a pretty incredible ignorance about how the modern industry works, and seems to demonstrate also the fact that he really doesn't necessarily care. I mean, he's taking credit for investment decisions that GM, Ford, and FCA have made since the middle of December, all of which, according to one ranking executive at one of those three companies, were probably made on average 2 to 4 years ago. And they certainly weren't made in the last month, but they're announcing them now, and the president-elect's taking credit for them.
I get the sense from reading your columns this week, the execs are very leery about speaking publicly because they're afraid of unleashing another Trump tweet storm.
I think that's right. You know, Sergio Marchionne was a little more outspoken, but he didn't say a whole lot beyond saying, you know, we'll adjust. This guy's the president of the United States. And to embellish that a little bit, I mean, he essentially said, look, the American people elected this guy. We've got to deal with him, whoever that president is, and whatever that president's policies are, and then we're going to decide. But until we get some clarity on what's actually going to happen, we really can't do a whole lot. Carlos Ghosn of Renault-Nissan said the same thing. I would say Ford Motor Company has probably been the most proactive. Chairman Bill Ford has spent some time on the phone with Trump, and I think has found him to be accessible and willing to listen, and also willing to learn. That's, I think, in the positive category.
And then, of course, Mary Barra is going to be on his advisory council.
She is, but General Motors, I think, in general, I would say, tends to be far more quiet about these kinds of things. I think their view is keep your head down, work things behind the scenes, and don't, as I like to say, don't give him a club to beat us with.
Now, as for Mr. Trump's pledge to revise or even scrap NAFTA, talk about your column today. Why is that less job-friendly than the president-elect thinks it'll be?
Well, the Center for Automotive Research in Ann Arbor, which is connected to the industry, but is also very respected in terms of being a think tank that really understands the industry, has a report out that says that they think it would cost, if he were to repeal NAFTA or establish large tariffs as high as 35% on Mexican-made goods, that could result in the loss of 31,000 jobs in the United States. They also go on to say that Michigan, particularly Southeast Michigan, would be hit very hard because it exports a lot of products both to Canada and especially to Mexico, and that there could be some knock-on effects there.
Why would we lose those jobs?
Because the expectation is that Mexico could retaliate and erect tariffs as well. Then the other possibility is you go from having the North American market to becoming the U.S. market, and then building and producing products in Mexico doesn't become cost-effective. Therefore, manufacturers are going to be looking for other places to source products and parts.
And those places might be where?
In Asia, likely in Asia. So somebody's got to pay for the tariffs, right? And as a general proposition, the old saw about business taxes is that businesses don't pay business taxes. The end consumers pay the business tax. So when business taxes are high, products tend to be more expensive. That's how a market economy works. And unless this president can repeal the laws of market economics, companies are going to go elsewhere to find production sites and sources for things.
With the possibility of at least 31,000 U.S. automotive and parts jobs being lost, we also have, for American consumers, they're going to pay a price if people just want to buy the car they want to buy.
Right. And there is an argument, and I've seen it advanced, actually, some comments on the column this morning already, of saying, well, you know what, if this is what people want, let them have it. Go ahead, repeal NAFTA and see what happens. Companies are going to do what they have to do, and there's going to be some knock-on effects. I don't think there's any question about it. And exactly what those are would remain to be seen. But, you know, after January 20th, when he actually becomes president, do you really think this is going to be the top one or two issues on his plate? I'd be a little surprised if it is. But the other thing that needs to be pointed out is he's got a number of people in his cabinet, prospective members of his cabinet, who I think the automakers are looking to as people who will bring some understanding and some sanity to this discussion. Elaine Chao is the Treasury Secretary nominee, ran the Labor Department for President Bush. Wilbur Ross, Commerce Secretary, is very involved in recapitalizing of the steel industry in the United States, has a great reputation with the United Steelworkers. And, of course, Vice President Mike Pence, Governor of Indiana, which is a major auto-producing state, one of the largest as a percentage of its economy. I think manufacturing has more manufacturing in it, maybe even than Michigan.
Detroit News business columnist Daniel House. As always, thanks, Daniel.
Thank you.